Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning in today. I have Rob from Retro Tech Dad. This is season two, so we've done a bunch of guys in the past, and I'm excited about this new season, and Rob is the first guest. So welcome, Rob. Maybe tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Sure. As Aiden said, my name is Rob. Most of everybody knows me as the Retro Tech Dad. Yeah, I've been doing the YouTube thing for about a year and a half now, and probably have come across some of my videos if you're in the Retro Handouts community. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say beyond that, but yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's great to be here. I'm really excited. I'm definitely following the footsteps of some really great people that were on last season. So I'm excited definitely to be here. So
yeah, no, thanks, Rob. I think initially when we jumped on the call, I've seen you on the Retro Handouts podcast, but because I watch your video, I just clean forgot what you look like. I was like, oh, that is the guy. Like, because you know, when through COVID and we met people with masks on, it's kind of like that where my brain had built this. I didn't really have a picture of you, but because I just hear your voice, I had this picture of this guy. And then I was like, no, that's not him. You're the wrong guy. I have the wrong person on the podcast.
I started doing the RH podcast as a way for my viewers to kind of see me in a different angle, different way, you know, kind of get a face-to-face, see me actually behind the camera for once. So it was something different for me when I started it last year. It was just a different way for me to just, you know, talk to my fans and show a little bit more about who I am and what I do. And it's been a lot of fun just learning with that. And over the year, just being able to hang out with the RH crew, all of that has been just a lot of fun, really.
Yeah.
The whole experience has been a ton of fun for me.
Yeah. So I want to start by kind of getting people into like who you are and in that vein, you know, like to start to get your audience to know you a little bit. So you mentioned you're in Arizona.
Correct. Yeah.
I'm actually trying, as you mentioned, I was like, crap, I'm not 100% sure I know where that is in America. That's near the mountains.
We're in the Southwest. So
Southwest. It's, okay.
Actually cold right now. It's Arizona does get cold. Yeah, I mean we're in the desert basically.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's great. I love it out here. I moved out to Arizona about 6 or 7 years ago and I don't see myself ever going back to the East Coast or anywhere else.
East Coast.
Yeah. So I was originally born and raised in New York City. So
okay.
A long way from the city here, you know. Very different lifestyle, but it just vibes with me. Nice to just wake up every morning and see the cactus, the desert. It's such a different perspective, really. So I very much enjoy living out in Arizona.
Deserts. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. I can literally leave my community and there's just cactus and hills and mountains behind me. So it's a fun drive every morning, every day, and just kind of admiring all the scenery and taking it all in. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, similarly, in my part is that I also grew up in the city. I grew up in Cape Town, and then moved to like a little town. I live in George, which like even South Africans, you go, yeah, I'm from George, and they just go black because they're not 100% sure what or where that is. They're like, you live by a person? I don't understand. You still live with your parents? I don't really get it. So yeah, so I also, but and I really enjoy it. I miss the city. Like, I don't know if you missed the vibe. I remember we first moved to like the middle of the country, which was awful. And then we moved here.
Okay.
And when we were there, I remember going, my wife needed something from like a hardware store. And it was a Sunday afternoon. I'm from Cape Town. I'm like, cool. I'm going to the mall. I'm going to get the thing. And I came home. I reckon I was like white because I was like, nothing is open. Freak the crap out of me.
For sure, very different. Like, I mean, you know, in New York City, you could literally step outside of your apartment and there's shops all around. They're usually open 24 hours.
Yeah.
It's very different. Here, I live in the suburbs of Phoenix. And so, you know, things just shut down pretty much. 9, 10 o'clock, nothing's open. You know, lucky if a grocery store is open. It's very different. It's very quiet here. There's like no ambient light. It's such a different lifestyle. But, you know, I guess as I've gotten older, I just kind of enjoy the more laid back lifestyle versus the whole city life.
Especially in the big cities,
you know. For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's partly why I moved out to the suburbs here. Just for my kids, you know, just kind of be a little more laid back. Just a good place to raise family and things like that. So a little more low key.
I think like watching American movies and stuff, you get a perspective of what it's like sort of. And like, you always hear people saying, you know, America's very diverse and it's very different. You know, like you, you like, I think we get a very one-sided picture sometimes by watching movies from California or whatever, but it's actually cool interviewing all you guys because I'm getting that feel, like I'm starting to realize how diverse it truly is, like just North America in general. Like every single person I've spoken to sounds like they're from a different country.
Oh, yeah.
Like you might speak the same, but you come from a very different part of the world. You know, it's very interesting.
It is. No, the whole country can be very different depending on where you live, for sure. I mean, I lived in New York City, then I lived in DC. I did my education there, my university there.
All right.
And I lived in California for just a little bit of time and then in Arizona. So you know, I've gotten a little bit of different city lifestyles and it's very different. Even just going from New York to DC is a completely different lifestyle as well. So you're definitely right about that. I mean, you could be in different parts of North America in general and it's just, it's like you're from a different country.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is amazing.
You say you studied in DC. What did you study there?
So I actually have a background in computer science, computer engineering. Okay. I went to University of Maryland and then did UMBC for my master's degree. So I've been doing the tech stuff for a very, very long time, even before I was studying it. I mean, just that was something I grew up loving to tinker with things and mess around with electronics and computers, video games, of course, that kind of fed me into that obsession. So yeah, I've been in tech for so long. It's both a hobby and a passion. It's both my career and just something I do on the side. So I've been in it for a long time. Yeah.
Interesting. So you said you listened to the other episodes, so you know that I've like jumped around and done all sorts of weird and wonderful things. So you've literally just been in it for years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always talk about the first emulation handheld, the GP32. And I mean, I was actually a high school student and I owned that thing and I actually remember owning it and doing things with it. So I was here before even the retro handhelds that we know of today existed. And
it was a thing.
I've been just tinkering and exploring and experimenting for a very, very long time. Yeah.
Cool. That's great. Yeah. I mean, my experience is very, very different. Like I studied at Bible College, then did sales, then did music. It's a bunch of stuff. It's crazy.
I've seen some of your, I guess, did you do photography?
So my day job is that. So I've always been a creative.
Okay.
It's been two things in my life, like creativity and tech. So my day job
it's a good crossover though, for sure. Like it's excellent to have that creativity and also bring it into the tech world. I think sometimes tech people can be very, you know, they just focus on one thing. They can't think outside the box always. So it's good to bring some of that element in. I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah. Cause I have found over the years that is my uniqueness, is because there aren't a lot of people that have those two things together sort of in their brain.
Yeah.
So that is where I bring a little bit of, interesting flavor to the YouTube space as well. But yeah, my day job is a social media management business. So I make like photos and videos all day, every day. That's what I do. Yeah.
So you're very comfortable with this. This is like nothing to you, basically.
Yeah, that's reminding me. I need to chat to Team Retrog, Mikhailov. I need to go chat to him. He needs some help with some camera stuff. So yeah.
I was going to say, I love your camera work. Like to me, you really, it's beautiful. You take beautiful shots. Just I love your film style. I mean, I've watched
a couple of
your videos as well, and I really enjoy it. I think you present content really well, and it's very easy to digest, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you and I couldn't be more different in terms of our style though, which is great. I mean, that's it's
okay.
A good thing.
Yeah. That's a good thing. Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. So let's talk about your sort of segue into YouTube. How long have you been doing YouTube?
So I uploaded my first video in July of 2022. So I've been doing this for about a year and a half now and pretty consistent, pretty steady.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of a baby in this whole world.
Yeah, it's just upsetting.
It's funny because I mean, I used to joke to people that know me that if I even had 1,000 subs in my first year, I would consider that a success. I would be super ecstatic if I got 1,000 subs. People actually would want to listen to me talk and subscribe to me. And I just didn't expect this kind of growth. I was kind of blown away by just the reception of the community
and
the viewers. I mean, everybody out there has been so amazing, honestly. I love reading all the comments and just interacting with the community in general has just been so much fun. It's been one of the best things I've done in my entire life, you know, just being able to do that in the past year and a half. So, yeah.
Yeah, it really does bring a lot of satisfaction. I do try, like, I sit and I nitpick each YouTube and I try to figure out, like, okay, why are they successful? Why are they successful? You know, like, I look at your channel and go, okay, why is it? Because everyone is so different. So the last episode of the last season of the podcast was Tech Dweeb. And I mean, he's at about a similar place as you. Yeah, he's an excellent content creator, similar like sort of level as you in terms of subscribership and that, but couldn't be more different. You know what I mean? Right. If we took the template of Tech Dweeb, we'd go, okay, well, Rob will never succeed because there's, you know what I mean? So I look at the different, you know, it's so starkly different.
I love what he does though. I mean, I actually got to the pleasure of meeting Tech Dweeb because we did the RH podcast. We actually had him as a guest and he's just such a nice guy. And, you know, you can tell he's so genuine about it. He's passionate about it. He enjoys this, you know, and that's the key thing. You can definitely tell when someone is enjoying what they're doing and that they're actually passionate about the hobby or just about the topic in general. So it does come through, I think, even if your face is not on the camera. You know, so I think his content is fantastic, but I agree. It's very different than what I do, obviously, but that's okay. It gives people different perspectives on YouTube, which is very helpful when you want to form your own opinion, I think. And, and that's what I always tell people to do. I've done that a lot of my videos is I say, you know, go out there, consume content, watch other reviewers, see if things are similar, not similar, you know, kind of formulate your own opinion about something. And that's always what I try to encourage, you know, don't listen to me as the be all, the only all type of, you know, advice, you know, for what to buy, what to not buy. I mean, because that's not actually what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to show you a product and show you all the things it can do and things like that. So, you know, I leave it up to the viewer to, you know.
You can forgive people for taking you as the authority because your content is just so good. I mean, it's at...
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So my point with Tech Dweeb is like, so I think his success is because he's like managed to capture like an entertainment level that's a lot higher than the rest of us.
Yes.
And that's where he's like really gone big. Whereas yours is just very accurate, very comprehensive information, and that's why people keep coming back to you, I think. And so maybe that is why you get those sort of questions and why you encourage people to look at other videos, because they're like, well, Rob said it, so it must be the right thing.
Yeah, it's more that, you know, I don't want my opinion to be that final destination kind of thing. I want people to, you know, listen to other reviewers. I mean, we have lots of great content creators in this space. I mean, and there's going to be some overlap. We're probably going to say some things that are similar, but, you know, maybe I like devices that are smaller or larger and versus another YouTuber that may just can't stand, you know, a large device. So it's just different perspectives. You know, the same thing with Windows versus Linux and all that gets into a whole discussion as well. So some reviewers prefer Windows, some reviewers prefer Linux, some prefer Android. Yeah. So you get into this whole crazy space here. And that's why I always think it's a good idea to be able to get different opinions and then be able to formulate your own opinion about, you know, is this right for me kind of thing. So,
Oh, definitely. But on that note, I decided that this decision at the end of the day was to go ahead with the video, but I was knee deep in research on setting up the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro just because I love the device. I'm very excited. Just super, like, I did like a printout to see how many, I'd written like 9 pages of setup guide and do this and do that and little details.
Yep.
Even though I'm not big on that, that is one thing that I really do enjoy to do. And then Russ releases a video. I'm like, this is so damn comprehensive. What am I going to do now? But anyway, I decided just to go ahead, put a different spin on it and move forward.
Which is great. I think that's a really good, it actually encourages you to be a little bit more creative about how can you present your content in a different way that makes you stand out. But also I'd say, like, don't be afraid, you know, just because Russ puts out a video, put your own video out. People might enjoy your take on something. And I mean, like, that's the same thing for myself. You know, I wasn't getting devices, you know, early on, and like in terms of it being a review unit or a prototype unit, I would get units just like anybody else. You know, I'd wait for it in the mail and then I get it and I make a review video on it.
Yeah,
and I found that people
just move ahead and do it.
Windows, you know?
Yeah,
Yeah. Agreed. I mean, sometimes you just got to kind of go with it and just do what feels right to you. If this is content that you're really passionate about, just go ahead and make it. That's what I would just say, you know?
I agree. Yeah, because I'm doing this pretty seriously. Like, I want this to succeed and I want to do something big with it. But, and then, you know, it does get frustrating when I see the growth is slow. I mean, me and TechDweeb have been chatting quite a lot and I enjoy talking to him. And, you know, after our interview, he was like, yeah, but your upload rate is just too inconsistent. He was just honest with me. And so I think the reason why I'm not at the level I think I should be is purely just because I overthink it. Like now, I nearly didn't do this setup guide for the Retro Pocket 4 Pro because I was like, well, Russ did a better one, so I'm just going to leave it, you know? But at the same token, one of my most common comments is, I just love your take on things. So, you know, I need to just flip and get out of my own head.
Yeah, I agree. Like that's something, I mean, I think we all struggle with that as content creators on YouTube. It's just, you know, some videos do better than others. You wonder what went right there, what didn't go right there. You know, some video that you thought, oh, this is going to get a lot of views, doesn't, you know, so it's hard. There are challenges as a content creator. You're trying to figure out your audience, try to give them what they want and what they want to see. I definitely had my own challenges with that too. I mean, I tried to get in my own head about it either and just keep making content that I'm passionate about and things that I want to talk about and just why I started it all. You know, the whole point of doing YouTube was just to make videos basically. So, you know, I'm literally just a regular guy just that I love tech and that's it. I just want to talk about it and show it off to you in cool ways, you know?
Yeah, I dig that. I was just like, while you're talking, I'm realizing that's where all the cool lighting happens for your intros behind you.
So, this space, this is actually the fourth setup I've had. It's changed a little bit based on my own personal life situations, but you know, you almost can't tell. But yeah, I started out with I had the IKEA the gray desktop, and that was my office, and I realized that the lighting doesn't work so well with that gray top. I think the white really makes the devices pop more on camera.
Yeah.
So I switched to white. I was working in my garage a little bit. Then I came back to my office and now I'm in my bedroom because we kind of restructured things a little bit. So this is going to all be redone at some point again too.
Okay.
You know, it's constantly changing. I try to make it look like that it never changed on camera. So I'm kind of clever and creative with my angles and my shots and things like that. So, you know, I've gotten used to just how to kind of do all that on YouTube and on the camera. I'm learning as I go and I'm still learning. I'm always learning, you know?
Yeah. I think the clever thing with you is your lighting, because that just is quintessential retro tech dad. So it, no matter where you are, as long as you got that sort of lighting look, it looks like the same thing, you know?
For sure. I always like doing the intros. You know, I used to do longer ones. I've kind of brought them down a little bit, you know, just to, you know, you turn it on, you know, it's sort of a tech dad video just because of those angles and the lighting. And then I start getting into it already. So, you know, again, that's just things I've learned over time, like trying to learn what works, what doesn't work. You know, I think people still like to check out my content because it's a little bit of both of the flair of the editing, but also, you know, I'm trying to deliver quality content as well. And I really spend a lot of time with it. I mean, my scripts are, you know, depending on what it is, if it's a review video, it's easily 15 pages. We're talking about, like, you know, in Word. So and it's a lot of it is just my note taking. I take notes as I'm doing things, I write it down, then I formulate it into a more proper script. But man, it's a lot. There's a lot there. It definitely takes a good amount of time to get things together, especially for review videos. Those are long. Those take some time to make, for sure.
I can definitely tell. Like, I can tell that they are well planned out. Like, that was definitely not a doubt in my mind. When, you know, just watching your videos, you know that a lot of thought has gone into it. Whereas, I feel like a lot of people, because I also get a lot of comments, people going, you're so good at off the cuff, but almost always that stuff is planned and written down beforehand. So even though, I mean, I am good at off the cuff. I mean, that's why I decided to do the podcast, but it's almost always really like, they're like, oh, that was such a good off the cuff video about the such and such device. I'm like, I spent days writing that.
Yeah, for sure. I actually tell Stubbs the same thing. I mean, you and Stubbs have just a natural presence on camera. You're very good, you know, off the cuff kind of thing. And that's why I think the podcast for you, it makes a lot of sense. You're very natural at it. And it's
like, thanks.
Yeah. Look, you seem very comfortable in front of a camera. So, and that's important. I mean, for me, I chose to not be on camera, you know. I saw that like other YouTubers like ETA, I mean, Taki, all the big YouTubers.
Yeah.
I'm like,
faceless.
You know, I'm kind of a shy guy, you know, in real life. I don't like the camera presence so much. And, you know, I was like, hey, I can actually still make videos and people won't mind looking at my hands. So that worked out pretty well.
It's a whole thing. Like faceless channels is a whole thing. And also it's a,
for sure.
It's a thing that you can leverage business wise later on, because now you haven't used your face. Because now my face is like a brand. Like the more my channel grows, the more I feel it. Like the more I can't maneuver how I look and what I do into other spaces. So it definitely locks you in, you know? So having a faceless channel, there are some benefits for sure.
Yeah. And once in a while, I mean, like longtime viewers know I'll sometimes be on camera for some little silly scene or something like that, just for fun. But you know, I mean, most of my loyal viewers definitely know what I look like. They head on over to the RH podcast. They get to see me in a very different perspective, different angle. And, you know, so I kind of still give my fans a little bit of that face to face. They know I'm a real person. I'm not some AI making content for people. So, you know, I'm real. I actually edit the videos. I script them. I film them. I do all of it. So, you know.
Yeah, that's crazy. So let's quickly jump out, because I like to ask this question. So for me, getting into retro gaming, was it like as nerds, I feel like so silly telling people like at a barbecue or something like, oh, it was such a meaningful experience getting into retro gaming, because they'll be like, you're a dumbass.
Yeah.
But I think for all of us, it was quite a thing. Like it was a special thing to get into this, the nostalgia and all that. So what was that moment for you where you were like, this is really special. I want to do this. I want to make videos about it.
So, you know, I've always thought about doing YouTube for a very, very long time, you know, probably 10 years now. And, you know, just, you know, based on what was going on in my life, it just wasn't the right time. I was still going to school. I was raising my daughter who was just a baby. So, you know, it just wasn't the right time, basically. And it kind of went on the back burner. But oddly enough, this device here, the Win 600, was actually the reason why I started my YouTube channel. It was my first videos, and it just kind of grew from there. And it was interesting because I think at the time no one was really making content about the device for obvious reasons. I mean, it was definitely very mixed. It had a very mixed reception. I totally get it. And what I was doing was just making videos showing what can actually be done with it. I didn't ever do a review video on it. I just was making content showing you, hey, these are the kind of games you can play. Here's how you do emulation with it. Here's how you run Bodicera, like all this different stuff. And that's where the channel actually grew out of, just me wanting to show what can be done with this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it kind of just evolved into everything, basically, you know?
Yeah. And every device, no matter how like rubbish or good it is, can win your heart. Like, I mean, I know Stud kind of, he went into like the Win 600 after it was cool, like the hipster, you know, like got into it once it was like no one liked it. So every device can be loved. But that's just a little point of like success, I think, because that was also a big moment for me. Like I tell the story because all the big reviewers went on holiday. So for whatever reason, I got my Miu Mini, or no, the RG35XX. So I got that before everyone. For some unknown reason, I was like, why did I get this so early? Russ was on holiday. Just all the big guys were quiet. And I was like, I'm going to make a bunch of videos about this thing. I was making shorts. I was going crazy. And I must have gained like over that December period, I must have gained at least over 1,000 subscribers. And I mean, that's quite a lot of growth for someone who was only at about 6,000 subs, you know? So I think capitalizing on a device is a little hack for people trying to get started.
For sure. And like even Stubbs has told me, like he's told me that I'm very good at making content on the same device. You know, I can make content, you know, different videos on just one device.
Yeah, exactly.
And I still do a lot of that, but I'm also doing a little bit less of that, which because I just have all these devices now to cover. But and it's funny because that was never my intention. I just thought I was going to be making videos like what I started out with Win 600, and I still do it. I mean, my last video was actually very similar. I did a whole Switch showcase with the Retro Pocket 4 Pro. So I still make that kind of content as well.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah, and there again, you say you make the content you enjoy. I could see that. Like, you love making that video, and it showed. Like, it was a great video.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, it's just, it's amazing to see this little device doing what it does. I mean, that's what it's all about for me. I get so excited about pushing the boundaries of tech and being able to see what we can do. And if you told me 2 years ago that a Retroid device would be playing Switch games, I would just be like, no way, that's amazing. So just the fact that we are where we are is incredible, and how much progress has been made in just such a short amount of time. It's just nuts. Unbelievable. It really is nuts. I mean, I remember sort of finding my way back into like this retro handheld stuff with the Retroid Pocket 1, and it was not a great device in retrospect. Like, it's not good. I played Minish Cap on it, and it was a Game Boy Advance game, and it uses shoulder buttons, but I mapped it to the face buttons because it's all I had. It had six face buttons, and it was just, but I beat the whole game on it, and that's kind of what got me back into this whole world, you know, with Ambernic and everything. I mean, so it was just interesting, like, because I've been there throughout the journey in between. I've seen the JXD devices, the NVIDIA Shield, even before that, like with the GCW Zero, the Dingu devices, all that stuff. So it really is amazing where we are right now.
your knowledge of this runs deep.
I've been around in a long time for this.
Been around the block. Yeah, and
sure.
I feel like the retro space is a little bit faddish, like, because the way I see it is people will be happy with a very simple device for a short period of time. Like, I see that a lot of people are like myself. Like, I went to university, and then gaming was just not on my radar for years. And I got married, then I had kids. And now, like, I'm older, I've got a little bit of extra income, and I'm like, cool, let me try buy this RG350M thing. I wonder what that's going to do. And then get into that. And then I got bored of that. Then I was like, oh, Steam. What is the Steam? And like, I progressed from retro gaming to normal gaming. And like, now obviously for my channel, I do both, and I do really enjoy playing the retro games. But where do you think it's headed? Like, where do you think this whole thing is going? That's a huge question, but I think about it almost every single day.
Yeah, because there is a point of diminishing returns, right? I mean, we're even starting to see that a little bit with Android. You know, there's only so much power you can put into these things. If it's not being utilized, then what's the point, right? I mean, Odin 2 is a kind of a good example of that. That thing, pretty much at this point, when it comes to the Android space, is the be-all, end-all of
the ultimate
Android
handheld. And we can't go much further than that.
No, we really can't. And even if we did, you start to wonder, well, why? You know, there aren't any native Android games that really make full use of that power, you know, unfortunately, which really bothers me so much. But, I mean, Switch emulation can... it's all dependent on how much development is done with the emulation itself. So Switch emulation is at a certain point, which means that whatever the Odin 2 can do with it, it's all based on what that emulator can do, you know? And, there's plenty of power under the hood to run probably the entire Switch library. But the problem is that the emulator itself is just not up to snuff yet. And just takes time. So, you know, I think the thing is, it's the same thing always, how it always is in tech. You know, it's just putting more and more power into devices, and every year there's a new version. And it's kind of trickled into this space now. You're seeing it. You're seeing it with the Windows handhelds. Every year there's new handhelds coming out with the latest, you know, AMD chipset. Intel's now back in the game with this. So it's a popular space. The funny thing is, we think retro handhelds, but then think about Steam Deck. Think about just even handheld. Nintendo Switch. Just handhelds in general. Look at the ROG Ally. I mean, however you feel about the ROG Ally, that's a very popular device. It did very well, you know.
Yes,
and then you had
definitely
other
shifted the industry. Yeah, I agree.
For sure, because then you had Lenovo step into the space. Now we have MSI coming into the space. And I kind of had that feeling that was going to happen. Yeah, I mean, I kind of knew that with Asus stepping in, that was going to change things for sure. The Steam Deck got us to that point, and now all these other companies are stepping in, and it's becoming a much bigger space than it used to be. So it's really amazing to see the growth here.
That's I love hearing you speak, because that's actually such a positive input and puts a bit of perspective on it, because we kind of, maybe in terms of me as a guy who just wanted to play the OG Super Mario Bros, that is very limited. I mean, everything can do that now. That's kind of like old hat now. But in terms of, for instance, the Android thing. So TechDweeb posed a very interesting creative thought, is like, what Valve did with the Steam Deck. They built a Linux system that I don't understand. You probably understand this better than me, but that runs Windows games through a platform that they created. And he was saying how they could probably do that for Android. And he reckons as soon as they do that, the whole thing's just going to blow wide open. Because
I think that's what's going on with the Switch emulator. I think that's actually how it works. Converting the instructions of Switch games to run on Android. So it's different of how it works, I guess. I'm not a developer, so I don't know fully, but
yes,
it is doing something differently there. And that's why the compatibility is so good and so high with Switch, even this early on Android. It's unbelievable. It hasn't even been out on Android for a year. And look at what we're able to do with it. It's incredible.
But the devs, I mean, like, you know, we've got like Ether SX2 that kind of just bombed, not bombed, yeah, but, you know, everyone kind of ran away from it. But Yuzu is like, the devs are like, chatting on a group and I was like, why haven't I downloaded Yuzu? Why am I not trying some Switch games? And then I only downloaded Yuzu like last week. And it blew my mind at how good it is. Like, it's just such a high-end app. Like you say, I think the development of software and new newcomers into the space, it's about to get huge.
And we have to also think about, we're obviously of a certain age, you know, and retro to us is different than
what retro
is to someone. It's what's like someone who's 25, right? I mean, what's retro to them? Not NES, you know, so...
Like PS4.
You know, they're going to want to play... PS3. Mm. But that's the thing. So someone who maybe was very passionate about PS3 or Xbox 360 growing up, well, that means they're going to have to start looking at something like the Steam Deck or a Windows handheld to be able to emulate those games from their childhood. Mm. So it's actually
a never-ending evolution. Yeah.
Exactly.
Interesting.
So 10 years from now, someone's probably going to be hoping that PS4 emulations at a certain point that they can go relive their childhood. So that's where maybe that hobby can keep going on and on and on, is that there's always something new to emulate. There's always improvements to emulators. You know, I've seen it from the beginning with PS2. I mean, I was around when PCSX2 dropped on Windows. You're talking about like more than a decade ago, you know, and just to see where it is now, and even having Android on, you know, PS2 emulation and all that, it's incredible. I mean, really,
it is.
Being able to play PS2 again, like on a device this small, like,
yeah, it is crazy.
If you told my 18-year-old self that, I'd be like, "No, you're crazy. Sony can't even get the Slim down that small." So it's amazing to see the tech progress with that as well. So
yeah,
I guess there's always going to be a need for more power in some way, you know. So I don't think the space will really ever fade away. I think if anything, it's grown tremendously, and I think it's going to keep growing. I think people are realizing how much you can do, you know. I think Switch is a good gateway into that, and the whole concept of handheld versus docked, and then the Steam Deck. And so now you're just getting a lot of different audiences coming into this space for the first time.
Yeah. Switch emulation has really opened my eyes as to, wow, like, we've really just only gotten started. This is crazy because, you know how we've seen more sort of mainstream tech, how the hardware and the software slowly but surely became so powerful together. Like, we only right at the beginning stages of that with this, which is really exciting.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah. Oh yeah.
And the other thing you said was retro is different to every person. You know, like, I had Simon Dingle on the channel and I said to him, retro gaming, what does that mean to you? And he's like, I really like DOSBox. And I was like, what the hell is that?
Sure.
He likes emulating DOS games, you know? And then he mentioned some game. The one I remembered vaguely, but I was like, he's just a little bit older than me. And I was like, I vaguely remember playing this as a very small kid, but it's out of my wheelhouse. So yeah, it's different to each person, I think.
Yes. Like for me, you know, I think NES, Super Nintendo, you know, Genesis, yes, things too. Like that. But I've been through all of them, you know, PlayStation 1, Nintendo 64, all of it means retro to me in different ways. You know, it was kind of there throughout my entire lifespan. So, you know, I kind of grew up with it. So it's very different, you know, versus someone who maybe was older than me who didn't grow up with video games, and video games came into their life later on. So there's so many different perspectives for people. You know, some people picked up video games later on in life. Some had it since the day they were born. it's very interesting to hear different stories about what's retro to somebody.
Yeah, it is interesting. So it's we mentioned the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro, and like you mentioned something that made me think, because I've been feeling a lot of pressure to get the RG556. Something in the back of my head's been like, I think it's something that I keep mentioning Tech Tweet, but I think he's just sort of impacted me lately. And like, he doesn't care what he reviews as long as it's something interesting and people are going to watch it, you know? And something in the back of my mind is like, you don't need to get the RG556. It doesn't have to come through your studio. Anyway, so I want to hear your thoughts on this. So, you know, we've just got on the Retroid Pocket, so the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro, and then the RG556 was launched. And then a lot of people immediately compare it to the Odin 2. Very different devices, different price ranges. And there seems to be like a constant argument in the comments right now about it. So I wanted to just chat about that. You know, the differences between all those three devices. Four devices now. And who you think they're for? I think I've gotten a little bit sucked into the, like, there must be one device, you know, and a few other reviewers have done the same. But I think my initial argument was, we are lucky to have so many different devices within a very tiny part of the niche
that
do similar things that can cater to. Well, do you have big hands? Well, do you like a big screen? Well, you know, do you prefer dome switches on your D-pad? Like, there's so many options.
It's funny.
Within just those four devices.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of my review videos, I'll end with that thought. I'll say, you know, we are very fortunate that we have so many different options. And so maybe this product is not right for you, but that's okay, because there's lots of other things that you can consider, and there's alternatives if this doesn't necessarily meet all of your points. And that's the beauty. I mean, like, we're a niche, but we have a lot of choice. It's actually really nice to see that. I mean, it's kind of amazing. I'm like, wow. And every price point too, every price point has options that are actually pretty solid. It's kind of amazing to see that, you know, they've really stepped up just the type of products they're releasing. It's really amazing how far we've come just in that 2-3 year span. I mean, these are actually really
crazy
high quality products that are being made right now. So it's nice to see.
It really is. Personally, I'm a huge fan of the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro. I prefer a more compact device. And also, I don't know how many of my videos you've watched, but I'm super price sensitive. Like, I'm constantly thinking, like, that's just ridiculous money. Like, so someone in North America is sending me I just don't know if they want people to know that they're doing this for me, but I'm getting a Steam Deck. And they're helping me out quite a lot with the price and all that kind of thing. And it kind of ends up, guys are charging, you know, someone maybe went to the States, bought themselves a Steam Deck and came back, and they'll sell it to you for about 16,000 Rand. I'm getting it for about 8,000 Rand from this person in the States. So I'm getting it like half price. Selling it here. What was the point of my story? That I kind of, you know, like the Odin 2, I did the maths the other day, and then I converted to our currency, and I'm like, who in their right mind would spend that kind of money on a device? You know, obviously it's different strokes for different folks, but I am more price sensitive in that regard. And I don't know, I am kind of unlimited into what device I can play because of the channel and that. But I don't know, my brain just can't let me. I'm like, I will like the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro. It's expensive and it's really nice and it's compact, you know, like forcing myself.
For a lot of people, that $200, this is doing pretty much everything they would want it to do. I mean, it's kind of impressive what you get for $200, but I also recognize that even $200 is a lot of money for some people. I mean, that's not a small chunk of change, you know? And, you know, that's why, again, like, it's, we don't know about the RP4, the regular RP4 that's coming out. I guess I actually have a unit on the way. It's shipping be arriving any day now. Yeah. So I did order that for myself. Yeah, I ordered that for myself just to kind of see what it's like. I mean, I know quite a bit about the D900 just because of the Odin Light, but, you know, again, that's another option. That's $50 cheaper. And then you can go even lower than that, and you keep kind of getting down to that price point. But it is amazing that what you can get for that $100 or under nowadays, there's really great devices at that $100 price point. I mean, it's kind of amazing, really.
That's actually a good video. It's shifted definitely, and it keeps getting better few months.
It does. So, that's why I think, like, with the 4 Pro, it really did set a new standard. I mean, this is the new $199 standard, and now all these companies have to now push that. And now with the 5.56, yeah. I mean, I think again, like I said, they're really in a good space. They're in between the 4 and the 4 Pro, and that's exactly where they should be. They are priced right for what they're offering, and it makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, it's options. You know, if you really want a bigger screen, you got the 5.56. If you prefer a more compact device, there's the 4 or the 4 Pro, depending on what your budget allows. So it's just nice to be able to have that widespread of options available to us.
Yeah.
And then if you need the be all end all, the best Android handle you can get, then there's the Odin 2. So,
Odin 2.
You know, the Windows space, I think, is trickier because there hasn't been a lot of meaningful budget Windows devices. Steam Deck is for sure there, but it's its own thing, basically. And really, if you are someone who loves Windows and wants a budget Windows experience, there's not a lot of options out there. The Win 600 was sort of under $400-ish, not really a great option. You know, now we have the Aya Neo, the Next Lite that came out, which, again, you know, it's a budget device, but there's concessions being made there. You know, you're getting a fairly old chip in there. You know, it's some questionable build going on there with Aya Neo. I actually have a Next Lite, and I took it out of the package. And the left analog stick is already not working properly. So that's always a tricky thing too with a lot of these Chinese manufacturers. When you're spending not just $100 or $200, you're spending
$100. When the price goes up, it gets risky. Yeah.
It does. It's, I mean, because you don't know what support's going to be like. You don't know if you're ever going to actually get any support for your device. If something fails, will they send out a replacement part? How do you get it to them? You know, that's why when I did my ROG Ally review, I said that this would be a game changer for the space in terms of Windows handhelds.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you can walk into a Best Buy and pick up an Ally. Yeah. If there's an issue with it, you can bring it back to the store. You also have Asus, who obviously will provide much better support than a lot of the Chinese manufacturers will. And then, you know, it just trickled. I mean, we have Lenovo, we have now MSI coming into the space. So it's a good thing. We actually need it. We need the pressure on these Chinese manufacturers to provide a higher quality product. Because if I'm going to spend $700-$800 or more, I need to know that there is some level of quality control going on there. And you know, it's tricky. I mean, like I do a lot of Windows devices. I've covered tons of Windows devices on my channel. And the reality is they never do as well as my other videos because it's a lot of money. It's a lot to ask for somebody to drop. Yeah. They're very expensive. And you know, I totally understand it. Like I wouldn't feel always so comfortable dropping $700-$800 on a device and with no assurances, basically, you know. And it's tough. That's the one thing where I would love to see a really solid budget Windows device. You know, the Steam Deck is a great option, and if you're willing to, you can get Windows on there, no problem. But I'd love to see more alternatives. You know, I think that's one area where we can see some improvement.
I think the whole Windows space is just at the infancy stage, and it's very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I think the ROG Ally, as great as it was, and I know some people don't like it at all, but it was an exercise in where things are going because you mentioned it. And I was like, that is actually the only device that I can buy here in South Africa in a local shop and have support. Like Asus, they have an agency here in Johannesburg. I don't know, my laptop's not Asus, but there's an agency. And if you have trouble, they follow through with warranties, you know?
Yes,
so if you buy an ROG Ally as a I mean, the price is ridiculous. It's like some crazy price. But if you buy it, you've got support. If anything goes wrong, they're there. They'll send you a D-pad if it breaks or whatever. Like, So it's all good. Like, we're heading in the right direction. It's very exciting.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, the Windows space has come a long way. I remember when the first Win 1 came out from GPD. And I was there. I backed it. I used to watch The Fox all the time. Like, I mean, I actually told The Fox, like, hey, you were one of my idols on YouTube. You know, like, I looked to you to kind of get ideas of what I want to do with my own channel. So, you know, I mean, like I've been there from like the Win 1, the Win 2, and I've seen that evolution of Windows handhelds kind of take place. And you're right. We really are in just the infancy of what can be done here. I mean, even Microsoft is starting to think about how can we cater Windows to these handheld devices. And
Because Windows also, it's only just starting to go, oh, Like, this is something. Let's start developing for this, you know? I mean,
yeah, there's a market here. There's a market here for this. they, you know, it's interesting. Microsoft is an interesting company. They at times can put out such innovative things, and at other times they could be so far behind. And it's like, what were you waiting for? You know, it's amazing. I mean, like, for better or worse, I mean, I'm obviously a Windows guy. I do this in my day work and all that. So I work with Windows for a long time. But sometimes you're like, what's going on over there at Microsoft? You guys are a multi-billion dollar company. You tell me you can't, you should be able to dominate every space you're in. You should be able to hire the brightest, the best, and be able to do all of this, no problem. Like, it's just amazing to me to watch their blunders. It's pretty funny. I mean, yeah. And I think even like with Microsoft, they don't even know what they want to do with the Xbox division. And there's always been talks about a handheld, an Xbox handheld. Is that going to happen? Is that going to be a thing? I think we're seeing so much still in the Windows space in terms of handhelds. I think we're just getting started. And now Intel is making a big push this year. They, like, out of like a vengeance, they want to take back some of that pie from AMD and the Ryzen. So so we're going to start to see a lot of Intel handhelds again this year. So it's good. It's great. It really is great. Competition is fantastic, because even like with the ROG Ally, it goes on sale regularly on Best Buy. I mean, you can get a ROG Ally sometimes for $599 brand new, and there's even open box units, and it goes for I mean, it's so, this is all a good thing. I mean, I know people tend to pick sides. For me, I'm all in on all sides. I think having more competitors, it's better. We as consumers
of the things.
I mean, because as consumers, this is great for us. It just means that they're all fighting with each other, and I'm just going to sit back and relax and watch and all those prices come down. That's the thing. We all get better products out of it as a result, and I think this is great. I mean, I can't believe that Asus actually made a handheld. I mean, I'm still like, this is insane, you know, and now Lenovo got into the space and MSI. Yeah. So I feel like with Asus, for sure, I think this is going to be like a yearly thing for them. I think they're going to do a product refresh every year, kind of like how they do with their laptops. I think they're going to treat these handhelds kind of in the same way. And I think we are going to just see that as a segment of the market, kind of like what tablets are, laptops and all that. I think this is just going to exist now. I think this is always going to be a part of the market. So I think we are, like you said, very much in the beginning, the early stages of where this can go, especially with x86 devices. And I can't wait to see. I mean, just the amount of power we have in a handheld today is unbelievable. The Ryzen chips are incredible, like the kind of performance we get out of them. It's exciting. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting, man. I can see I scratched a little nerd nerve there. You know, like, yes, I love all these things. And
I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with Android, too. I love seeing all the Android devices. You know, again, like everyone in the space, they have their own takes on their overlays and all the little tweaks and options you can do. And even that's come a long way too. Like back in the day, you wouldn't have performance profiles that could be adjusted. You wouldn't have an overlay for gamepad mapping and frame rate counter, all this stuff. So it's cool to see that evolve as well and become more gaming focused and gaming centric. So I think the manufacturers are listening. They are paying attention to what people want. And that's a good thing. That's definitely a good thing.
Yeah, it's hitting there. I mean, like last year when they went to the RH guys and Russ went to CES, I remember they sat them down and specifically Russ, and they were like, okay, this is a big YouTuber guy. Let's hear what he has to say about his niche. And they spoke about, you know, there's retro gaming. Did you know about retro gaming? And then shortly after that, they brought out the retro version of the Pimax portal, you know? So
Pimax thing was very interesting because I actually worked with the Pimax team as well. Like, And so it's interesting that they basically ignored everything Russ told them. He gave them advice about what to do.
Perfect
example. They just stuck to what they had. They actually didn't really change anything from when they showed that product at CES. So the retro kind of came towards the end of the year because they were like, we can't sell this thing. No one wants to buy this because they still don't even have their VR portion ready. It still hasn't even launched. So
crazy, really.
It's crazy. They were so stubborn about such small changes. If they made those small changes, they probably could have dominated. They could have sold a lot, just like what the Odin 2 was doing. I mean,
they had a lot of
time. It was the most powerful.
I mean, we were excited.
Yeah, the D-pad is probably the best example of that, where they all you had to do was come out with a version where you had the left controller just be a traditional D-pad. That's it. Just offer that as an option. This is just as an accessory. Like it's so you have this modular device that can have the controllers be removed and you did nothing with it. So it's just, you That's wonder what goes on with some of these companies. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Russ said that he spent a lot of time with them at CES. He sat down and even beyond CES, he spent a lot of time with the company talking to them and telling them about things and just nothing.
They're like, oh, what a nice guy. Let's not listen to him at all.
I think their market has always been VR. And even if you look in the VR space, they have very much a mixed reception as well. People either love them or hate them. So they tried to do something different with the handheld. I thought it was a fantastic idea. I thought the Pimax Portal was a really clever idea. I loved the idea of it being able to dock into a VR headset, but none of it ever happened, you know? So here we are more than a year later after last year's announcement at CES and nothing has changed. So this happens a lot. I think this happens quite a bit, you know, in this space. So it's unfortunate.
Cool, Rob. It's been really cool talking to you. And I really hope everyone watching enjoyed listening to Rob. I know he's got a lot of loyal followers. So if you have any questions, send them in the comments and maybe we can respond to them and give you some answers. You know, this isn't a live stream, so we can't do any of that during this. But thanks so much for agreeing to do this. I know you're very busy. So it took us a while to organize this.
I know. I really wanted to do it last year. When you reached out to me again, I was like, I owe it to Aiden. I need to do this for you. Sure. So make some time. You know, I really wanted to do this for you and be able to do this. Just I think what you're doing is great. I really enjoy your content a lot. I love the interviews. I think it gives fans and viewers a different perspective of all the content creators. I really love this space. I love being in this space. I think everybody I've met, everyone I've talked to in the community, all the other content creators, they're all great people. And it shows, you know, that they're passionate about things. It really does show. So I'm very thankful to be here.
Cool. Thanks so much, Rob.
You're very welcome.
Cool, man. That was great. I think we covered a lot. I honestly, the Retroid Pocket 4, it was leading up to your video. And then I saw your video. I think it was this loaded this morning for me. I don't know when you uploaded it, but...
Which one? The Switch one?
The Switch emulation video. And I was like, this is all the stuff that I've been wanting to know. Yeah, because I don't know why, but I just ignored the Switch emulation that it could do. And then I downloaded Yuzu and I got a few games. Like I got Super Mario Wonder going today. I was like, this is insane. How am I playing this game right now?
I know. Like that was one of the first games I loaded up on my 4 Pro when I got it. And I was like, this can't be. How is this game working? I know. I'm amazed. I'm like,
crazy.
You're now playing Super Mario Wonder on the most compact device that you can play Super Mario Wonder on. You know, it's even smaller than a Switch Lite. Not a big deal. So it's crazy. And, you know, I always tell people like, look, Switch is a bonus. It's fun to experiment, fun to see what you can do with it. But I was blown away by how much is actually playable on here. I was
I mean, even if it is just a handful but it's more than a handful of games, it isn't really a bonus anymore. It's like just kind of.
No, there's some really quite a big bit of games on there. I've been playing Prince of Persia on mine. Every night I go to bed, I play a little bit every night, and it's great. The Lost Crown's running great on this thing. I'm like, wow.
That's insane, dude.
It's fun. I mean, the funny thing is my target for that video was, okay, let me try to see if I get 25 games that are worth talking about and running here. And it just kept going and going and going. I was like,
I mean, your video loaded and I was like, okay, it's going to be just like, you know, short little gameplay thing. And then I was like, he's got it alphabetized. Like there's like eight of this. What the hell is going on? And it's just mind blowing.
Yeah. A lot of my showcases are like that. You know, I try to make it a one-stop shop. You kind of come in, get some of the setup, you get some of the tips and you get the gameplay too, to see how everything looks and runs. And I kind of tell you some kinda settings like along the way. Pudding. You know, I do enjoy doing those are definitely my favorite.
You can see
take time for sure.
Very top video.